Welcome to the Good Grief Conversation. I'm your host, Janet Jones, and you're listening to UK Health Radio. This programme brings you honest, gritty, emotional and inspiring conversation around a subject that affects all of us, yet is still very much taboo. So, join me now for this inspiring Good Grief Conversation. Today's conversation is slightly different. We always seem to feel that grief is part of physically losing another person, their life. But grief shows up in all areas of our lives, wherever there is loss. And one of the big losses of modern society is in relationships, and that is in divorce or the ending of a long-term relationship. So today, I am speaking to Maxine Clancy, who is a divorce expert. She's just about to write her book, The Divorce Detox. I can't wait for it to come out. When it does, she's going to be coming right back on this show. She has some superb information and guidance around the subject of grief around divorce. It's amazing. I've even been speaking to friends who have been divorced for years and say, you know what? I don't even think that I'm over the grief of my divorce. So it's my great pleasure to bring Maxine Clancy to you, and hopefully who will also shine some light and bring some peace around what you are going through in your life. So here is Maxine. Hi, Maxine. Thank you for joining me on the Good Grief Conversation this morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Or afternoon or evening, wherever people are listening, I guess. Yeah, I felt that this was a really important subject to talk about, grief and divorce, because many people are getting divorced. I heard a long time ago, actually, I heard that it's actually harder to get over a divorce than it is from losing your spouse, because one, the marriage is over, but the relationship, the people are still there. You may still share children, etc. Whereas if you lose your spouse through death, you go through that process and then get on with, you know, your life without that, I guess, reminder. So I believe it takes longer. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, I'm so glad you've actually said that, because it actually helps, because so often, particularly I've been divorced twice, but in my second divorce, there were so many times, and it sounds awful, that I wished that my husband was dead. And that sounds like the most terrible thing that you could say. Why would you wish that?
And that's really honest of you, actually, Maxine. You know, it's really honest of you, but I reckon people do think that.
I think they do, and I think it's something that people don't say because it's such an awful thing to say.
It's shocking.
Yeah, it is. And of course now, you know, 10 years later, and in fact, you know, I ended up having a very good, healthy relationship with my ex-husband, but at the time when you're going through that intense period of pain, and, you know, I was devastated. He left the marriage. I literally felt it would have been easier if he was dead, because I wouldn't have to see him. And I'm sure there's many of your listeners that would say, no, that's not the case. Because, you know, when we're grieving someone that we've lost, what we want most is one just last chance to see that person again, to say the things that we didn't say, or what we, you know, express things. So when I say that, I don't want it to sound contrite, but I think it's because what it is that when you're grieving in divorce, it's very, very similar to a bereavement, but you obviously have that continued relationship, and the relationship changes. As, to be honest, the relationship changes when someone dies. You know, you still have the relationship that you had, but any future relationship with that person, you no longer have all those hopes and those dreams and those expectations, and that sense of incompleteness is what we experience.
And you're grieving that also. It's not that you're just grieving the person or grieving the marriage. There's grief for all that. I always think grief is like when you throw a pebble into a pond. It ripples out in so many different ways.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So it's a very difficult time. I think, you know, in a lot of the work that I do, you know, with people that are going through divorce, it's helping them to understand that the emotions of grief, of which it is experienced like a roller coaster. One day you can, you know, be aware of appreciation and your love for someone, and then the next day you're sort of sinking right down, and you've got that anger and that despair and the frustration and that sense of hopelessness. It's really about helping people to navigate those deep, intense emotions and coming to a sense of completion around areas of the relationship that are incomplete. And also, if you can take, you know, I think all experiences, so grief is up there on the top of the list, divorce is up there on the top of the list, you know, like major redundancies or, yeah, all those life changes, they're really a catalyst, aren't they, for our own personal transformation? And how do we come back to a source of love within ourselves as a way of filling ourselves up? That's how I tend to look at it.
I think you're right. And I think all grief, whether it's a loss of somebody because they've physically died, or it is a marriage, or it's the loss of your job, or, you know, money, whatever, it throws up insecurities. It reveals your own personal weaknesses to you. And so as hard as grief is, it's not something that I think, oh, well, you should experience grief for this reason. But grief comes into our lives. You can't avoid it. But what I found is that it opens you up and gives you the opportunity, if you take it, to work on yourself and grow some more. Now, a lot of people don't take that opportunity and close it down and then, you know, just always want to go back to how things were. But if you do that with a relationship, you're just going to create the same relationship in future ones, would you say?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So the way I look at it, it's interesting. You use the word weaknesses and I was like, oh, that's interesting. I look at it and it's probably the same thing, but just a different languaging. I look at it that grief, that bereavement, whatever it is in your life, it cracks you open. So in other words, it actually opens up our hearts. Yeah. And physically, we feel the pain of that. There's lots of spiritual traditions which will talk about why you experience the pain of, like, the physical pain of your heart cracking open. Yeah. And that is so you can actually expand your consciousness in relation to love. Yeah. So you have an expansion. Now, naturally, what we do is we close up, as you say, and we close up. And the reason we want to close up is because we have that, you know, that self-preservation, that protection within us, that our ego is designed to keep us safe. And yet, so where you use the word weaknesses, if you actually look at it, that it's revealing everywhere within you that you don't love yourself, everywhere within you where you are limiting love. So most of the time what happens in divorce, and I would say the same in grief, is that people shut down, they close down, they don't express what they're feeling, or they're usually afraid to express, like they feel it, but they don't speak about it, they don't shout about it, they don't really go into the rawness of that. If people were to do that, yeah, it would reveal, as you said, weaknesses, it would reveal the parts that they need to evolve their consciousness around. So in other words, it would reveal to them maybe the wounds from childhood, the sense of isolation. And, you know, I was working with a client yesterday. She'd had some coaching with me some time ago over a breakup. And she reached out to me and said, you know, I need a couple of sessions with you. And when we got on the phone, it was all to do with the isolation, that what it really tapped into her, this, you know, this isolation we're going to, you know, COVID-19, is that she felt so alone. And that aloneness is what often we feel, you know, in grief, which we can actually feel alone when we're in a relationship and with someone.
Absolutely. You know, lonely in a crowd.
Yeah. But that aloneness, what it did is when I sort of did a bit of work with her and we dropped beneath it and we said, so let's take that back. Where does that really stem from? It stemmed from a time in her childhood when her father went away. Yeah. And she had given a meaning to that. That was no longer serving her. So the way I look at it is everything that shows up is an opportunity that's revealing us the parts of ourselves that need to be healed, that need to be loved. And so we can open up and expand into love. And as a result of that, we actually have more love to give and to share, and we feel more complete within ourselves. And I think that grief cracks us open to see that. Horrible though it is actually can be, and this is why I love what you're doing with the good grief, is that actually you can allow yourself to use grief, the grief that you're going through, like the life situation, because that's all really it is. It's a life situation. Yeah, you know, I'm not belittling what it is, but it's a life situation that's a catalyst for your own growth and transformation.
It's not only a life situation, it's a very powerful life situation. And when you talk about, you know, we were just saying about how it rips you open, and depending on the grief and the severity of it, it can rip you wide open, blast you into pieces. But it's when it's open, you've to look at those places where you can grow. And let's face it, we both know this is not an easy path to take. It is easier to close it over and just carry on life, you know, your daily routine, or a lot of people, rather than face it and walk through grief and address these wounds that have been revealed, will soften it by drinking, eating the wrong things, avoiding, you know, any avoiding tactics from drugs, food, whatever, and sex included in that, that avoidant tactic. But really, the power is in going through it. That power to that greater love that you talk about is going through this.
Yeah, and I think it comes to two things, is I honestly believe we're not taught how to transform difficult emotions as we're growing up. So there's a skill set, isn't there, in learning and having emotional intelligence, emotional mastery. So if we're never taught how to work with grief or these difficult situations in life, then the norm is to, and actual, like, because there's this sort of inner desire to go for comfort and safety and whatever's pleasurable. So because it is a difficult path to walk, yeah, it's very easy and socially acceptable in some way to actually not heal, you know, to repress our emotions, to you know, as you say, to drink and use all those short-term fixes, because it seems like such a difficult thing to do. But the problem with that is that all those short-term fixes will eventually lead to repressed emotions. And it actually takes more energy to repress and push down emotions than it does to allow them to have their natural course and to come out, okay? And if we don't allow them to come out and have their natural expression and learn how to use the energy of the emotion to help lift us up and transform whatever we need to transform in ourselves, what happens is we end up, like, you know, depression, fatigue, extreme tiredness, et cetera, maybe lethargy, you know, all these different types of things. Maybe we feel a lack of purpose in life, and we end up having long-term unresolved grief. That's why it's so important to do the work, even though it's painful and even though it's uncomfortable. And that's why I absolutely recommend that people get professional help, because the problem is we all have well-meaning friends and well-meaning family members. But the most common thing, and I, you know, I think about my mum when I think about this, and I love my mum dearly, and I'm lucky she's still alive, you know, but the first thing it would be would, like, well, have a piece of cake and a cup of tea if you're upset, because most people don't like dealing or being present when somebody else is really upset or when someone else is in so much pain. Our natural thing is to want to fix it, to want to make it better, to soothe that person, to almost silence their grief, because we're uncomfortable with emotions, deep, intense emotions. We're uncomfortable with them.
But I guess also, what we want to do when we see a friend or family member or a loved one, or even our children, everyone who we have compassion for, we want to help to take that pain away. And you can't take someone else's pain away. That's been a massive lesson for me.
And in fact, you're doing them a disservice, aren't you? You're actually doing someone a disservice, but it's absolutely right. You know, I know myself, if my children come in and they're having, you know, they're teenagers, they're having challenges at school, and you see their pain, it's natural to want to soothe it for them. But the skill is, the real skill is learning to soothe ourselves. So in the divorce work I do, I teach my clients, you know, to self-soothe, to listen to those emotions and witness them, like really see yourself. So like a typical thing, like it would be, okay, what are you feeling? And then there's a surface, you know, there's surface feelings. And then if you're dropping down, you ask the same question, sweetheart, what are you feeling? What else are you feeling? What else are you feeling? You'll drop down from, say, anger to like sadness to often in like grief, it's despair, hopelessness. And when the person gets down to that place, you know, all the way through the layers, you get them to say, I can see that you're feeling this. Like, so like you literally witness yourself, mirror back to yourself and acknowledge and validate your feelings. And this is what we're missing in society today. So often we do not get validated and we need to validate that grief. It's very, very powerful when you do that. And then underneath that, you look at, okay, what is it you need? What do you need, sweetheart? And then when someone says, oh, I need a hug. I need someone to stroke my back. I need someone to hold my hand. You know, it's stuff like that. Like that's because that's our child.
And someone to say you're doing great as well.
Yeah. You know. Yeah, and it's okay.
You're doing great. I see your pain, but you're doing great.
Exactly. And it's okay. It's totally valid that you are feeling this way.
And it's part of the journey. It's part of you finding greater love for yourself, love and compassion for you. And then you can find love and compassion for other people.
Totally. There's a Buddhist technique. It's called Tonglen, T-O-N-G-L-E-N. And it's really about compassion. The technique is where we breathe into the feeling that we're feeling. So, you know, when we're suffering, it's about releasing suffering. So when we're suffering and we're in pain and we're, you know, sitting, and this is the thing, most people don't want to sit with their pain. So they maybe have a drink or they have a coffee or they numb out on TV. And I understand that, yeah. But if you sit with the pain actually just like it moves through you. It's like having a baby, like a contraction of a baby. Like it comes and it goes. It's like the wave on the beach, you know, the waves on the beach coming in and out. If you sit with it and you breathe it in through your heart center, and then on the breathing out, you literally breathe it out with a blessing for yourself and others. And what it is it helping us to connect with the oneness that we're all, like we all suffer at some level about something. Today, there's going to be, I don't know how many millions of people in the world suffering either the loss of someone because of COVID-19 or just because of other illnesses or an accident. There's loss, isn't there?
There's suffering. Always. It exists all of the time.
And you see, the thing is, there's that saying, and I don't know the source of the saying, but it's pain is inherent, but suffering is optional. So there is a period, particularly like around grief, where it's like, yes, that's painful. What you're going through is painful. And then it's like the suffering is part of the mind. Like, how long should I grieve for? How long should I be suffering for? You know, and this is where people, I think, both in divorce and in bereavement, they come up against society norms. You know, is it okay? Like, I mean, for you, with the work you do with the Happiness Millionaire, and you've got all these tools and resources, and what would society think if you were to suddenly use all those tools and resources and they were to help you with that grief in such a way that you perhaps didn't look like you were grieving anymore?
And you know, that goes through my mind as well, because I'm not a year after losing Murray yet. And people say, oh, but you're still very much in the early stages. And you think, okay, well, does that mean that I should be miserable still? Have I not given myself enough misery time? Well, that's just silly. Murray doesn't want me to be miserable. My other children don't. And it's a bad example also, if that's not what you're really feeling. Because sometimes if you feel like from society that that's expected of you, maybe you'll turn the misery tap on just to pacify them. But if it's not the truth, you're not doing yourself a good service or the people who you love the most. Because after that, it doesn't really matter what other people think.
I absolutely agree with you. And I do think it's a difficult one, because the egoic mind is going to be saying all sorts of things to you, all sorts of beliefs that have been instilled in you from very, very young. And I think it's important to let everybody know on here that whatever you do is right for you. It's most important that you're doing what's right for you. So everything that I'm talking about today is not the right way of doing it, but it's just offering a different perspective around it. And it's really interesting. One of my best friends, my bestest friend, committed suicide when I was, my daughter is now 15. So it was 2 weeks before she was born. So 15 years ago. And I do think it's really interesting around what your beliefs are about what happens next in helping one to transition grief. Yeah. So what I was aware of at the time was that, you know, and I've often looked at this and thought, well, did I grieve her? Like, did I do it properly? You know, like, because there's a proper way, isn't there? Did I do it the right way, the proper way? Did I, you know? And it was really interesting because, you see, I have a very strong spiritual belief that when we die, we go back to source. So in other words, we are pure consciousness. Like, we're already pure consciousness. We're energy. So whenever anybody dies, literally their form, the physical body no longer is available, but their form is still here. So I believe I see her in butterflies. I see her all the time. I hear her. She came to visit me. She sat on the end of my bed. And you see, I think that my spiritual belief, and obviously, look, she was my best friend. And at the time I was living in a different country, so I wasn't seeing her all the time, et cetera, et cetera. But I really do believe that because of what I believe about death, it helped me to transition the relationship. I can still have a relationship. I just can't have a glass of wine and a cake with her. Do you know what I mean? Or a candle. But I still have her in my, like, if ever I want guidance, I often talk to her because to me, she's there. And it's the same with my grandmother. I often smell my grandmother.
I hope it's a pleasant smell. I'm not sure I'd want to smell Murray. Yeah. If I got Murray's smells, I might complain to him.
Yeah, but you that's the thing though, isn't it? Like, so I do think that if we have a belief system that supports death, and I think this is where it goes into a lot of the traditions, and I don't know a lot about the traditions. You know, I know the Jewish tradition is to sit shiva, they call it, where people come and they sit with the body. And I've seen that. There's a fantastic movie about that, which I'll find the title. But I think like some of these traditions, the old traditions, and some of the beliefs, like, you know, the Hindus and these spiritual, they really can support us in the grieving process and in the letting go process.
But I'm just sort of coming back onto divorce, actually, now that you've said that there are traditions for a grieving process. There are no traditions for a grieving process of a divorce. So you're left like trying to figure things out, not really knowing. And then that grief becomes very individual, as opposed to being able to have rituals, or even as you were just saying, where this other person, you know, it's the body that's gone, that you still sense the spirit. So you still feel that you can have some kind of dialogue. But in divorce, you can't. And the only dialogue with the other person is usually filled with anger and, you know, and all that. And so that needs altering. So what might we do with that one? What can we offer people with that?
Yeah, I think you've hit on something really important there about that there is, you know, generally not a tradition to end the marriage. So I work with people on conscious divorce, like conscious loving divorce, because the reason you want to heal your divorce, your breakup, your long-term relationship, whatever that is that the quality of your next relationship is going to be based on how well you ended your last relationship. So if you don't end it very well, and you've got festering resentments, anger, incompletions around the relationship, and you haven't really fully grieved, then what will happen? You will carry that into your next relationship, and it will affect your ability to have a fulfilling, happy relationship. So one of the things, and it goes back to what meanings are you giving to that divorce? Like, if you are stuck in, it's my fault, there's a lot of shame, there's a lot of, you know, self-recrimination, you felt you could have done better, or if you've been betrayed, so, you know, if there's been affairs and stuff like that. If your meaning that you're giving to it is that it's either just their fault and you're putting all the blame on the other person, nothing is ever 100% somebody else's fault. You know, there's always two people in a room. So what it's about is finding that self-empowerment in that process through taking responsibility for the part you played. So how did I contribute to the breakdown? How did I show up in ways where maybe I wasn't fully myself in the relationship? You know, what did I expect from my partner that I wasn't giving to myself or doing for myself? You know, I was unconsciously, I wasn't aware of it, but I was a victim in it. So it's really helpful when I take people through like a conscious divorce process, we're looking at, first of all, emotional empowerment. So how do we deal with difficult emotions? How do we get back to our core and our center?
Which is compassion, isn't it? At the core and the center is compassion.
Yeah, compassion and love. It is, yeah, love and compassion.
Which is thin on the ground when there's divorce.
It often is, yeah. It often is.
Often. Not every time.
Not every time.
Like you said, not every time. Because sometimes it's quite a loving thing to do to get divorced. If you know that you're in that marriage and you're not fully present in that marriage, you may think, this isn't fair to this other person. This other person who I do love could possibly find someone who maybe loves them better than I do, or in a way that they want to be loved that I can't show up for. So that's about open communication then.
So that can be the case, but often, I've been divorced twice, but my first husband, I left the marriage because he changed his mind about having children. And also I'd been trained as a psychotherapist and we've grown in very different paths. And it was the kind thing to do, to actually divorce him. At the time, he did not see that like that. You know, had he have had a divorce coach, there weren't any divorce coaches then, but had he have had a divorce coach, might have helped him to get that new perspective. So, you know, it's, what is your perspective? How are you looking at this situation? And eventually we became, I set an intention. He's going to be my very good friend, Paul, and we became very good friends. And he went on to have a family with someone else, actually, funny enough. And he said having his daughter was the best thing that ever happened to him. So, you know, that was a gift. Now he can see the gift, yeah. With my second husband, he left me. And if you had spoken to me, you know, certainly 7 years ago, so 3 years, you know, in the first 3 years, I would still have wanted really to try and make that relationship work because I was so in love with him. But now when I look at my life and how amazing my life is, and I've recently got engaged and I have the most wonderful relationship with a very different type of relationship, but really wonderful for the stage of life that I'm in now. And I sound really old when I say that, but I'm not having children. So yeah, I know, I'm actually quite young. But what I mean is, you know, he's just the most amazing partner for me. And I did not think that I was going to find love again. You know, I really was really challenged. I was like, well, I've had two loves in my life and really good loves, and I'm never going to get a third one. And now I have the most amazing relationship. I see my ex-husband. We're good friends. We're very good friends. And the funny thing is I see him and I think, I'm so glad I'm not with him anymore, because we really would, you know, I can see all the things about why we didn't work together without myself being insulted by it anymore. Whereas at the beginning, we're insulted.
Do you think that's because, you know, you can't see those things because we're caught up in fear and the grief of the things that we thought were coming in our life that have gone? And so you can't see those things at that point, can you?
I think it's really interesting. So I think there's a couple of things that happens. I think our ego is designed to keep us safe and to survive. Yeah. So the minute that we're in that grief stage, shock, denial, can't believe it's happening to us, panic, all that sort of stuff, body's overloaded. So then there's the physical impact of what happens to the body with stress. Okay. All rational thinking goes out the window, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We're struggling just to survive. Yeah. Then that is literally.
At that point, when, like you're saying, we're struggling to survive, the body's in overdrive, the mind is going crazy. It's so tragic when you hear of people who have taken their life because a relationship ended. It's a tragedy because, as you've just said there, when you were in that, you would have taken him back. For 3 years, you would have had him back to make it work. But now you can look at it and go, actually, my life would not have been fulfilled with him. So for somebody to act with such severity in those early stages is a tragedy on top of a tragedy.
It is a tragedy. And it is absolutely terrible that people, for whatever reason, that their pain is so strong or so intense or, you know, whatever it is, that in that moment they make those choices and those decisions. And so I think, you know, when you get back to that there is the physiological impact of, you know, the stress on the body at that time. You've also got the, you know, our innate survival instinct, the desire to live that we do have, you know, like our life force, our spirit that runs through us. And I experienced that very profoundly when Alan, my husband, left, in that I just suddenly got this urge to go running, like to move my body. And I think if you listen to some of those hints and some of those whispers within you that says, you know, walk, exercise, move, or if it says sleep today, you know, like, and you follow them, like your spirit is almost like guiding you and saying what you need to do. And I got this urge to run, and I used to run through the woods and scream. Like, why me?
Yes, yeah. Because that's another release. Yeah, just throw it out, you know.
All of this stuff is really good for you to get the energy moving through your body. So all those type of prompts are really, really important. And if you can recognize that there are the stages, and that these stages, they're not linear, you're on like a roller coaster with them, etc. So this is the thing with grief, and it's the same in divorce and the same in bereavement. There literally are layers of intensity of it. And you obviously, initially, there is that extremeness of it. Yeah. That's not to say that you don't ever experience an extremeness again or a sense of real loss again. And so, like, even now, 10 years since my divorce, as I said, got engaged, you know, a few months ago, very happy. Every now and then I will think about something, maybe in the past, or you're triggered, and I feel that sense of loss. And it just reminds me, and I think, oh, that's really sad about that, really. You know, it's my son's 18th birthday next week, and we're going to have a little isolation party for him. And I suppose I am grateful that I have managed to create a healthy relationship. And that's always been very important to me to do that. And so I think it's really important that people realize that loss, when we feel it later, when I sort of the other day, and I can't remember what exactly it was about, that I sort of sensed that sort of sense of loss. And then I thought, well, what is that really about today? Well, how did that loss that I'm feeling now relate to my life today? Yeah. And it was actually the fact that we've been in isolation, and there's a part of me that's missing out on other things in life and feeling I can't do those things. So even like years later, if you have done some good grieving work, but you find you get hooked into something, and I think that's okay. It's just important.
I think it's normal as well, you know, and sometimes we can take that, you know, that might arise and then we take it out to another extreme and start to build on it and build on it. But actually, you know, what possibly just ran through your mind is, well, maybe if we'd have stayed together, we'd all be in isolation together and we could have had his 18th. And that's when we start taking responsibility on us, isn't it? That you go, yeah, that moment would have been good. But what else have you had to give up to have that moment? And what you just said there about your relationship with your ex has been really important to you to have a good relationship. It requires the other person to also have that as an importance too, because it's important to me. But at this moment in time, I haven't achieved it. I did for a little while and then things changed and now I haven't. That is still important to me and I would still like that. But it requires the other person to also want that too. And if that doesn't happen, then you just have to have respect for the other person and say, well, you know, that is how it is. We'll work with this then, you know, we'll make this work.
I'm a firm believer in the metaphysical. And doing metaphysical work on relationships. So when my first divorce happened, my husband at the time was extremely angry, like passive, aggressive, nasty. And it would have been easy for me to just go, yeah, exactly. And I decided, he's my good friend Paul, and I only ever spoke with him and referred to him as my good friend Paul. Like literally, if any one of my family members said anything, I just decided, and I'm going to continue to send him love. When I think of him, I'm going to send him good vibes. And I did some few techniques around, you know, the relationship in the way I visualized him. He became my good friend. Like literally, he came and stayed with me and my second husband and our two children. So there is the metaphysical side of things. when someone in your life is refusing to, and I'm not saying it's going to happen miraculously the next day, it's a period of time. But if you continuously take the energy, you send out that good energy, you maybe visualize the relationship, you do some healing, some honopono, I love you, thank you, please forgive me, you know, that foresaying thing. There are techniques that you can do that will change the relationship metaphysically, because what will happen is you will let go of the energetic charge you have around that person. And so when that person does their thing, which could be whatever it is, you just don't have a charge around it. And so all resistance drops. So what happens when resistance drops, yeah, you just are able to let go of stuff. And the flow, like the energy, everything flows differently. And it's the same in grief. When we're talking about the resistance to grieving, if we just let go of that resistance and allow ourselves to feel in the moment, and most of the time we don't, because we've got to get up and we've got to go work, we've got to look after our kids, or we've got to do this, or we've got all these pressures. So we hold in our grief and we don't allow it to move through us. If you just let it move through you,
or push it under the carpet. Quite often, certainly in divorce, quite often it's just pushed under the carpet. No, not going to give that any more of my time. It's done. But actually, it's asking for your time. It's asking for your healing and your love.
Absolutely. And that's the thing, you see. So for me, I use a phrase and it's like, you've got to love yourself more than ever before. So when you're in any type of grief, divorce process, separation, loss, that is when you have to up your levels of love. Like, you got to literally raise your consciousness so much higher than it has been for any time. You put yourself in a higher structure. And that's, you know, if anyone likes reading, if you read the book Power versus Force, where he talks about, it's Dr. Hawkins, and he talks about the consciousness of emotions. And he has a scale of 0 to 1,000. And 1,000 is, you know, God consciousness. And like 20 is shame. Shame calibrates at 20. Now, the interesting thing is that you need more energy to be in a state of shame, because it's a denser consciousness. It's more matter. The vibration of that is denser. So you're using more energy, which is why people are so zapped out. The people are so exhausted when they're like depression. But you go through these levels and anger is above depression. So you're better to feel angry and to let that anger come out. Yeah. And then what will happen is usually when people have that anger, they'll drop back down into a sense of despair, like almost like a hopelessness. But then when you allow yourself to be in that, and then the nothing, like the complete nothingness, like where almost like you're numb, that is where you then can tap into hope. And then you lift yourself way up above to like 250, 300 on the scale. And love calibrates at 500, and gratitude and like true appreciation calibrates at 650, 700. You've probably seen the meme that goes round, you know, an attitude of gratitude is the quickest way to shift yourself.
It's true though.
So like, even if you're currently going through, you know, divorce process or something, if you can just begin each day to either wake up and say, what am I grateful for? Yeah, a couple of things, but really feel it. Don't just sort of say, oh, I'm grateful. You've got to feel it.
Yeah, just don't say it. And what are you grateful for that relationship that you had that you are now letting go? You know, where's your gratitude on that? And that'll bring healing. With Murray, you know, realizing the depth of the pain and the loss, actually very, very early on, because I know the power of gratitude very early on. Now, I could have looked at it completely different and I probably would still be in the state of despair, because, you know, there's another side to that that's very dark and raw and just not a nice place to be. So, but that's just, if you focus on the not nice place to be, you can stay there for a very, very long time. And I'm sorry, but life is short.
I totally agree. I think it's sad that, you know, people don't reach out or they don't get the help that could really support them to navigate these really difficult times in a powerful way, in a way that empowers them to live more fulfilled lives, you know, to experience more joy and more bliss.
And also to gift themselves the time to to do that. Because like you just said, you know, we're always so busy, we've got to do this, we've got to do that, and we put other people's needs first. But actually, if we just stop and say, right, I need every Friday afternoon or whatever to be with me, to talk to me in a loving way. And obviously, you know, the morning and the night thing, I think that's a given. Morning and night, we should be saying loving, kind things to ourselves and to, you know, in our minds to those people. In fact, I did in my very first broadcast of this, I did the loving kindness meditation, the Buddhist loving kindness meditation. And I use that all the time, morning and night. And my ex is in that list as well. And so it's about just giving that kindness to everybody. And in my podcast extras, I actually have done that even deeper. So in fact, talking of podcast extras there, that was a nice little segue. Earlier, I asked you what you could provide for the podcast extras for my listeners who are, you know, going through divorce and what you could help with the grief, or maybe they've gone through a divorce and now they are stuck in that grieving process, however long it might be after. And you said you had a couple of PDFs that might
help. Yeah, I do. Yeah. So the first one is a PDF, which is about the grief cycle, actually. It talks about the grief cycle in terms of the roller coaster of emotions. And rather than just sort of the five stages, it goes into it a little bit more detail. So that's a wonderful one. I was going to say the emotional power. I have another one, which is an emotional power practice. But actually, on that grief, the divorce grief one, there actually is a practice in there, a very short practice that people can use to help to just transform those difficult emotions. They can see themselves, where am I on the cycle? And, you know, am I really in that stage of I need to be getting help? Or am I in that stage where perhaps I can do it a bit more on my own? So yes, it's a very helpful practice. That's what I'd love to share with you.
Yes, that's fantastic. And those questions about how to check in with yourself when you are looking at yourself in the mirror. Just let's just wrap this up now with, so if somebody is in this place where they're grieving for the loss of their marriage or a long-term relationship, and they decide to, the first step for them to make the changes, what would you say that would be really helpful just as a short wrap-up?
Right. So I think the very first step is to find your emotional power and your emotional stability. And one of the ways you can do that is by using the power practice on the free download. But it is literally, if you start by actually speaking your emotions out loud and then witnessing them, mirroring it back to yourself, I can see that you're feeling that, whatever it is, you're feeling sad, angry. And if you do that, like, it's a good practice to do in the evening, and maybe just start to make a little journal of what are the emotions that I'm feeling on a day-to-day basis. And you'll see the ones that are really depleting you and the ones that perhaps could energize you. So that's also helpful to note. And then I would really ask, the other question I would ask yourself is, what am I making this mean? What am I making it mean about myself? What am I making it mean about the future? How am I defining life as a result of that? Because the meaning and definition you're giving to yourself, I am, that affects your identity and the way you show up in the world. So if you're making it mean I'm a failure, and you keep reinforcing that through your thinking and your feeling, that inner critic judgments you're making about yourself. So, you know, it really goes to looking at those two things as a starting point. And what I would really say to people is, don't suffer on your own. You know, you'd be very surprised if you work with a good coach, can make a huge difference. Yeah, it depends, you know, what you've got, what other experience you've had or problems you've had that maybe you haven't looked at. But even just, you know, with the grief process, you can really, and I do think it's about, you know, someone being able to witness your pain. When I trained as a psychotherapist, I was a bereavement counselor for about 4 years. And I just honestly, my experience that time, you know, I was very moved about it, really, is there were people that really stood out, that they just wanted someone to hear their pain, you know? And I think we want that.
And I understand that, because the world wants you to be back to how you were. And as I've always said, there is no going back to how you were. You must transition to who you are about to be. And so how do you do that when you are surrounded by people who want the way you were back? So to be with somebody who doesn't know how you were, to just let them hear you, like you say, you need someone to hear you so that you can hear yourself often, you know. Maxine, we could talk all day.
We could, I know.
In fact, Maxine, when your book is ready, I would love you to come back on here and we talk some more.
Oh, yeah, that would be wonderful.
Because this has been a great conversation. I've learned loads myself and I'm always appreciative of that.
Yeah, me too.
And I just hope that my listeners have really taken some great knowledge from here. I'm sure they have.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear from you, actually, listeners. Just email janet@thegoodgriefconversation.com and let us know what you've taken from this program. That would be absolutely fantastic. And of course, you can get those PDFs in the podcast extras over at www.thegoodgriefconversation.com. Maxine, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you ever so much for your time.
Thank you for having me. It's been wonderful. Take care.
Well, that was some great information from Maxine. I hope that you've taken a lot out of that. People don't associate grief with divorce and struggle through all kinds of things, but Maxine's got some great information. If you would like to connect with Maxine, then her website address is maxineclancy.com, and Clancy is C-L-A-N-C-Y. So MaxineClancy.com. Head over and take a look at more of Maxine's work. She's an amazing, amazing woman. And don't forget, there's also the extra gifts that are in the podcast extras. So Maxine's got those extra two PDFs that will help you. You can get to work on certain things right now. Just go to www.thegoodgriefconversation.com. And if you scroll down, or I think on the computer it's side by side, but on your phone it's a scroll down, and you'll see a yellow button that you want more information about the podcast extras. And of course, there's lots of information there from my other amazing guests too. Now, if you would like to support my work, then there are a few things that you could do. Number one is tell all your friends and share this content with them. If you know anybody who's going through similar problems, then, you know, this would be a gift to them to share this information with people. And of course, you can join us on all the social media, give us some of your love, your likes and your hearts. And that would be on Instagram. It is instagram.com/thegoodgriefconversation, and the same on Facebook. So it's facebook.com/thegoodgriefconversation. And if you would like to support my work financially, then I've put together a couple of options on the podcast extras. For the price of a paperback book, you can sign up, or the price of a hardback book, you can sign up. All depends on what your position is. And of course, it's really important that people can get access to this information, even if they can't afford to. So there is a free option there too. But your support would help me to get this information to more and more people and to continue to create this amazing content. So this is Janet Jones on The Good Grief Conversation here on UK Health Radio. It's been my absolute pleasure to bring Maxine to you, and I look forward to speaking to you next week. But before I go, I would also like to just say a couple of thank yous. A special thank you to John Medcalf, who does the sound for me. I don't really think that he knew what he was getting into. And my lovely friend Teo for this fabulous music that we get to listen. He's written it specially for this program. So special thanks. Amazing. I will speak to you all next week. I'm Janet Jones, your host on The Good Grief Conversation here on UK Health Radio. Bye for now.